Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an update on Egypt now, with the generals back in charge 3 years after the revolution, and the Supreme Commander Field Marshal Sisi having just been given the army's approval to run for president. Ambassador Cynthia Snyder, former U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands, now professor of diplomacy at Georgetown University, joins us to discuss her article at CNN, How America Abandoned Egypt's Arab Spring, and whether the presidential election in April will mark the end of Egypt's flirtation with democracy. Then, with President Obama expected to discuss income and wealth disparity in his upcoming State of the Union address, we will speak with Sam Pizzagatti, whose latest book is The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class. He joins us to discuss his latest article at the Washington Spectator, Plutocrats Ponder in the Alps, and the likelihood of Obama taking the Congress to task for enacting the agenda of the plutocrats at the expense of a viable middle class and living wages for working Americans. Then finally, in advance of the State of the Union, we will discuss what kind of house the president is addressing, given that half of the room appear to have made a career out of demonizing Obama in ways that are both racist and disrespectful to the office of the presidency. Ian Haney-Lopez, a professor of law at the University of California, Berkeley, joins us to talk about his new book, Dog Whistle Politics, How Coded Racial Appeals Have Reinvented Racism and Wrecked the Middle Class, and whether or not Obama will call out his tormentors in Congress who use race to unite and motivate their dwindling base. And joining us now is Ambassador Cynthia Snyder, who is a professor of diplomacy at Georgetown University, dean of the School of Diplomacy at Dubrovnik International University, and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. From 1998 to 2001, she served as U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands, during which time she led initiatives in cultural diplomacy, biotechnology, cybersecurity, and education. She has an article at CNN, How America Abandoned Egypt's Arab Spring. Welcome to Background Briefing, Cynthia Snyder.
Thank you very much for having me.
And on Saturday, Field Marshal Sisi in Egypt held a big rally to gauge public demand for him running for president. And now apparently he's decided that the Egyptian people really want him to run for president, and it's likely to be announced in the next couple of days. And contrasting to that, of course, is the former president who was ousted by General Sisi is on trial for a jailbreak, and he's sort of screaming at the judge, saying, "Who are you? I'm the president of Egypt, and who are you?" So there's some odd theater going on in Egypt, and I think it's for those who saw the hope of democracy 3 years ago, it's not a pretty picture.
Well, I think, Ian, your choice of the word theater is a very good one, because that's what a lot of this is, certainly in the case of the quote-unquote support for, I guess we have to call him now, Field General Sisi. You know, the support for him that came out in Tahrir Square was also quite a bit like the quote-unquote support for the Constitution, namely that only those who already supported him had their voices heard. You know, it was quite a restricted thing in the square. You were allowed in, out. You were allowed to be there, you know, in the streets if you were supporting Sisi. You know, if you had the Sisi paraphernalia with you and everything like that. The people who don't support him, which are now many of the liberals, seculars who started the revolution, the key people of whom have been jailed by this military regime, so they certainly weren't out there, they were in jail, and also the Muslim Brotherhood, they can't be heard because there's now been a law passed that restricts protests and basically gives the police the power to arrest gatherings that they don't like. So, you know, gatherings in favor of Field General Sisi, they are allowed. But when the secularists and liberals gathered, they were fired upon with live ammunition. So, you know, it's difficult to say. And, of course, the Muslim Brotherhood, many of the leaders have been arrested, and those who haven't been arrested are, in effect, under house arrest, or house self-imposed exile, because if they go out and are recognized as Brotherhood members, they can be arrested simply for that reason, because the government has branded the whole organization as a terrorist organization. So it's a really a terrible, terrible picture in Egypt. But I noticed in your summary, the one group you didn't mention, which I really think merits mentioning, and that is the, you know, the people who did originally lead the revolution 3 years ago, and their followers. And, you know, I think it's easy to think that those people have simply disappeared because we don't see them in any positions of power. But I think the film that I discussed in the article, The Square, this Oscar-nominated documentary of all 3 years of the revolution, shows us through the lives of three people who were very active in it, that this movement is still alive. It's very much still alive. But, it, you know, it's going to take a long time for the changes that were the original changes of the revolution, social justice, bread, individual freedoms, rule of law, it's going to take a long time for those to take hold in Egypt. But people are still fighting for them.
And again, I'm speaking with Ambassador Cynthia Snyder, who's a professor of diplomacy at Georgetown University, dean of the School of Diplomacy at Dubrovnik International University, and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. From 1998 to 2001, she served as U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands, during which time she led initiatives in cultural diplomacy, biotechnology, cybersecurity, and education. She has an article at CNN, How America Abandoned Egypt's Arab Spring. So General Sisi is announcing somewhat magnanimously that he wants to unite the people, restore security, and Egypt's international standing. I would think that if the movie The Square wins the Academy Award, it may get some showing around the world. And I know the filmmakers and the film, and it does not increase General Sisi's standing in the world and his government. So what's your sense of whether there can be some pressure from the outside for the general to at least restore some semblance of democracy?
You know, I have to honestly say I'm not as optimistic as I would like to be about that. We are told that Secretary Hagel is on the phone regularly with General Sisi, with when he was still a regular general, with no apparent effect whatsoever, and, you know, the United States has withheld some aid, not all of it, though. We still have a sizable military relationship with Egypt. And meanwhile, other countries, notably Saudi Arabia and the UAE, are coming in with huge donations to Egypt now to sort of keep this government afloat. So I'm in the short term, I'm not optimistic because he simply doesn't seem to respond to pressure. In the long term, I think that he's going to do as well in the presidency as President Morsi is. And by that, I mean that the Egyptian people are simply not going to put up with another authoritarian regime that does not deliver on the basic economic development reforms that are so desperately needed in that country. And in a way, it's impossible for General Sisi to do that because the military controls a sizable proportion. It's kind of a black box. Nobody knows exactly how much, but be, you know, cautious and say 30% of the economy. And so naturally there's interest in the military maintaining positions of power, and now with the new constitution, positions of impunity. They can't be touched by any other branch of government because that enables them to have this financial control and to enrich themselves really without any oversight.
So, Cynthia Snyder, then going back 3 years ago to the revolution, and I've spoken over the period of time with a lot of the people involved in the revolution, which as you point out, was led by the liberal and secular forces initially, and the Islamists sat on the fence and then later joined, and they ended up being the beneficiaries of the runoff and the second election, which the better candidates, both on the Islamist side and on the secular side, didn't make it to the final round. You ended up with the worst of both worlds. But I remember talking to Jawad Nabulsi, who's one of the who organized the first triage first aid outfit for the in the revolution, and he said he'd been talking to during the period of Morsi. He kept talking to the Morsi people and saying, you know, you guys are screwing it up, you're incompetent. What you don't understand is that at the end of the day, they're going to come after both you and us, you know. And he seemed to have predicted it accurately.
Absolutely. And I mean, one thing that you said in your early preamble that I just want to modify slightly, it was indeed the military who pushed Morsi out, but they were only able to do that because of the huge youth-led grassroots popular movement led initially by the Tamarud movement against Morsi. And that's what brought all the people out into the streets. And then the military, I think, in a very smart way, simply consolidated their power. And what's disappointing, and this relates to what was disappointing about the election to which you refer, what's disappointing is that the liberal forces in Egypt still don't seem to be able to organize themselves in any politically effective way. Now, some of them won seats in parliament in the early election, and you know, and that was fantastic. But unfortunately, now one of them, for example, both of them, I think, Amr Hamzawi and Mustafa El-Megar, are both not being allowed to leave the country. But as a single group or a two parties, even there hasn't yet been that sort of political maturation and the tough decision making, you know, that leads you not to run three candidates but to run one candidate. And I think there, you know, there was a moment, certainly you needed the military to actually physically remove Morsi from power. The demonstrators weren't going to be able to do that. But sadly, there was no sort of civilian coalition in waiting to say, okay, so now we have a transition government, and then we will move to elections. And instead, General Sisi moved to consolidate, and he played on, I think, some very real sentiments, and they really were sentiments that had to do with the Egyptian sense of pride and the Egyptian sense of identity. And I think many people I talked to had actually ventured a vote on Morsi, willing to give him a chance, but the Brotherhood presidency was so disappointing because it did nothing to meet the needs of the country. And I think many people just looked at President Morsi and thought, no, this person does not represent me. The Egyptians are a very proud people with good reason. It's a 7,000-year-old civilization. So the contrast between this sort of maladroit, and we all know about the awkward gestures and the poor English, President Morsi, and this very handsome General Sisi in uniform, I think the contrast is so stark that many people have just gone over to General Sisi because they feel he visually, in whatever way, represents Egypt better.
So, Cynthia Schneider, is that to say then that what happened 3 years ago was not a revolution but an uprising? After all, you know, the military have run Egypt since 1952, and now they're back in the saddle, and assuming that Sisi gets ratified in the April elections, they could be there to stay for God knows how long.
And you I don't think so at all. I don't think so at all, and I didn't mean to give that impression. I think what happened absolutely was a revolution. And I think what happened this summer was a revolution again. And what happened, again, this is not perceptible on the political map, but people changed. You know, the Egyptians always say, we have not yet banished the regime, but we have banished fear. And I think that is tremendously important. You know, they talked about the original 18 days as a time when people woke up from their sleep and, you know, woke up to the realization that they had rights and that their government should be responsible to them. Now, the problem is they woke up in a country where there was basically a vacuum. You know, there's very little civil society, very little political organization. So you have two institutions, the Brotherhood and the Army. And it's going to take time before the feelings and the awakening that absolutely took place can coalesce into real political candidates and movements. But it absolutely is going to happen, and I think you cannot put the genie back into the bottle. And again, to go back to the film, The Square, I think the last moment of that film where you see the young man Ahmed Hassan, the former lime vendor who has really found his voice in Tahrir Square, 3 years later, after the breakup of the Brotherhood camps this past August, Sisi is in power. It's looking quite bleak, very restrictive. And when he's asked, you know, how do you see the future, he says, now is the time that Egypt must develop a conscience. Well, you know, I think that is just an incredible comment. It's so incredible. I did ask the filmmaker, Jahan Nujam, did he really say that? How is that possible that someone just comes out with something like that? And she assured me that he really did just say that. And I think it's a very profound comment. You know, in a way, we expect this, you know, fully formed political nation to emerge after 18 days. And it's just not possible for people who've been under authoritarian rule for decades. But nor is it possible, I think, for them to go back to authoritarian rule for decades.
Well, just in closing, Cynthia Snyder, if indeed the Liberals sort of got had by supporting Temerud and then ending up with the military and being out in the cold, and then you have to add to that, as you mentioned earlier, the foreign interference, the Saudis, there was a tremendous shortage of gasoline and diesel and food, which was probably artificially manipulated. And the minute the military came back in, suddenly the money flowed out of the Gulf. So their motives, of course, are very anti-democratic. What can the Liberals do to come back?
You know, I was talking to an Egyptian lawyer the other night on the anniversary of the revolution, and he said that actually, despite the drawbacks of the Constitution, which does protect the military and basically insulates it from any form of oversight, but despite that, it does actually guarantee more individual freedoms than previously existed in Egypt. And he suggested that one avenue is for people to take cases through the courts, to protest the treatment they're getting and to take these cases through the courts, which are, you know, I said, do you think the courts are reliable? And he said, on the whole, yes, not always, but on the whole, yes. So that's one path, go through the courts. I have another friend, a very active in civil society, who has been working for years on reform of the security sector, and she's going to continue to do that. So I think you have to chip away at the system to the very best of your ability. And then the other thing is really political maturation. There has to be some kind of a consensus around a candidate for president. And really, you know, good professional campaigning. And I think, you know, I hope very much that will happen. It hasn't happened yet, but I think people realize that in the earlier election, had they had one candidate instead of three, they had the majority of votes.
Right.
So, you know, that may not be possible against General Sisi. He's very popular right now, and he's going to seize the moment. But I don't think he's going to stay there forever. And, you know, just the one other element that you mentioned, it's certainly not a sustainable situation to have the entire Muslim Brotherhood leadership in prison, much less the former president on trial. You know, the Muslim Brotherhood, whether you like them or not, and there's no question that they ruled very, very badly when they had the opportunity to do so, they still have the support of, you know, at least 20-25% of the population. And not only that, but they traditionally, part of that support comes from the fact that they have provided essential social services to the poor of Egypt that the government has not provided. It's a perfect storm.
Well, Ambassador Cynthia Snyder, I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Ambassador Cynthia Snyder, who's a professor of diplomacy at Georgetown University, dean of the School of Diplomacy at Dubrovnik International University, and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. From 1998 to 2001, she served as U.S. ambassador to the Netherlands, during which time she led initiatives in cultural diplomacy, biotechnology, cybersecurity, and education. She has an article at CNN, How America Abandoned Egypt's Arab Spring. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking about income and wealth disparity, which President Obama is expected to discuss in his upcoming State of the Union address.